Welcome to Deep Rooted Healing, a contemplative podcast exploring the healing bridges that connect the body, mind, heart, and soul, including creative practices, touch, nature, spirituality, and community. I'm Emma Freeman, an artist, poet, massage therapist, and Reiki practitioner. I'm a highly sensitive person and sober. This podcast is a record of my own unfolding spiritual journey. And may it be supportive for you in some way. I'm so glad you're here. Hi, everyone. This week, I'm really excited to share an interview with you that I did with Lauren Oland, who runs Mesame Designs. Lauren is a sustainable textile artist and weaver based in Austin, Texas. And she is doing such beautiful, wonderful things for this world and creating sustainable fibers, wearable textile pieces that are all made from remnant fibers. And she runs a zero waste studio, which I find fascinating. And we talk more in depth about in this conversation. We also talk about her background studying apparel design and being a freelance teaching artist, how she discovered weaving and developed her style that was influenced by learning a Japanese style of freeform weaving called Seori. We talk about her approach to color and how weaving connects to her deep musical background. We talk about how weaving helps her process emotions and connect to herself and the world spiritually. And we talk about how the pandemic and a move from the Twin Cities of Minnesota to Austin, Texas have impacted her art practice and her business. And we cover other things too. And I just really enjoyed this conversation. And I've actually known Lauren for a couple of years. We used to both live in the Twin Cities, and I had reached out to her when I was running my shop to see if I could sell her work. And she said yes. And I ended up selling her work for a while and really loved it and loved sharing it with the community that I brought into that space. And since then, we've stayed in contact. And I reached out to her recently to see if she would be interested in doing an interview because I really wanted to learn more about her background and what goes into her work that I feel so drawn to. So you can see her work on Instagram and in her Etsy shop, which I linked to both of those in the show notes. And that's it. Okay, so I hope you enjoy this conversation with Lauren Oland. Oh, and one more thing. You'll notice a little bit of background noise for part of the beginning of the interview. Lauren was sitting outside for a little while, so there's just some, you hear an ambulance at one point and some of the wind. So I just wanted to mention that. And okay, that's it. Here we go. Well, thank you so much, Lauren, for chatting with me today. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I would love to just start by hearing about your journey to becoming an artist and a working artist, whatever you want to share about that.
Thank you. That I am excited to share. Thank you so much. So I went to school for apparel design, and I always was very interested in sort of the handcrafted part of apparel. Initially, I was actually thinking of going to school to be like a home ec teacher, so facts. And as I was looking at the programs, I mean, this feels like so long ago now, I'm like, I would only look at the program if hands-on apparel construction was part of the curriculum. And so eventually I was thinking, well, is it really just that I want to do that? And asking that, you know, to myself, the answer was yes. So I started looking at apparel programs instead. And even in that direction, it was always the handcrafted side of apparel that really drew me in and held me and fascinated me by far the most. I would add a lot of handwork to my projects and kind of became known for the knitwear side as well as the sort of more traditional crafted side of apparel within my program. And I studied in New York for a little bit, and they were fascinated by sort of like all of these little techniques that I knew and was bringing into my projects that they don't even teach, because I just would be so excited about it that I was learning about it on my own. When I was in New York City, although my initial goal was to sort of go fashion industry route and possibly move there or to somewhere in California, I was really repulsed by the waste and sort of some of the really bad social issues within the industry that obviously couldn't be like resolved by going in to work for it. And I came back from New York City and got an internship with the Textile Center. And it just opened up so many doors to me, helped me really learn who I was as a maker. I was so fortunate to be able to just immerse myself in so many different skills because A, they would actually like teach me new things so that I could teach it because I had like enough of a foundation so that I could usually like learn a skill and go teach it if I didn't know it at that point. But then also I was mentored by a lot of different creative women who do all these different techniques from hand dyed to hand woven to embroidery. The list like goes on and on. And so I sort of a few years into that career track, because I ended up just staying as an independent instructor for several years, I had this opportunity to help coordinate programming for a sustainability and fashion exhibition at the Goldstein Museum of Design at the university. And the curators who put that exhibition together were really digging in a lot deeper than I had seen a lot of academia go with sustainability and fashion. At that point, it was still just a lot of, well, it's sustainable because upcycled. And they, as they were curating their exhibition, realized that garments were sustainable for one or more of many reasons. And so they defined several different sort of umbrellas of reasons that something could be sustainable. And then part of my job as the programmer was encouraging youth that were visiting the exhibition to be able to identify like why something was sustainable and how it was more than just in being upcycled. And that was a really pivotal experience for me. And some of the sort of things that they had defined, I had not realized connected me back to sustainability because I was always very interested in that. However, the handcrafted side of it or purchasing handcraft engages emotional connection, an emotional connection to what we wear. It evokes cultural significance and it also ties in sustainability because we're less likely to throw that thing away. And then, you know, add mending skills on top of that, it becomes even more sustainable. And there were just all of these sort of things that I was like, oh, like it's all sustainable. That's what my whole thing in teaching as well as making is. And at one of the events that we hosted, we had a freeform weaver. And I had done weaving before, but I had never approached it in a freeform, very open-ended way. And also not in a way that used all kinds of sustainable fibers, sustainable in different ways. And it was so inspiring to me. And it was like, I loved teaching so much, but all I wanted to do was that weaving. I just wanted to weave and weave and weave. And I think realizing that there was a lot of sort of symbolism within the weavings that I started producing that engaged me to that level. Then I had kids a couple years after that. And it became at the time really impossible to continue making and running all over the Twin Cities teaching, which is what I was doing at that point. I was teaching for the College of Design, still the Textile Center, and then several other organizations and small businesses. And I, all as an independent contractor. And it was like, well, I really do love doing this weaving. And I kind of rebranded it a little bit to make it more possible to make it into an actual business. I sort of like rolled with it. It took off and I slowly had to stop teaching. So that's like, in, you know, there's a lot of other like little twists and turns in there, but that's essentially how I ended up doing Mezume full-time. It's been really, really fun and really exciting to see how something that I'm so passionate about and that has a lot of experience behind it has become my full-time small business now. So yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit more about the free form weaving and how that's different than other kinds of weaving?
Absolutely. So the gal who had taught me this particular type of weaving. It's called Saori, S-A-O-R-I. It's a Japanese sort of, there's a whole culture around Saori. They have certification processes to teach it. They have specific tools. Generally speaking, it really has a lot to do with just keeping it super open-ended and ensuring that the students that learn preserve that side of it, that it's meant to be something where you constantly experiment, you're always in the moment, and every time you sit down at the loom, it's something brand new. And I never did go with the certification process. I initially thought that that was my direction, but it felt like I was very, very interested in how this particular weaving could become a product. That was my fascination and kind of obsession from day one. And then I was very interested in also seeing how I could maintain this idea of like continuing to totally change things up and like totally kind of like reinvent the wheel like a lot of Saori artists do. And I had another realization about that where it felt as if the signature process that I sort of started was something that I was really attached to and not necessarily something that I wanted to keep changing and changing and changing. And so my root is definitely in Saori. I was taught by Saori instructor, and I still use those tools. So the loom and the warp board is all Saori. But I don't necessarily, since I don't know if I'm following all the rules, I don't know if I'm doing things the way that whole organization would want, I don't call that part of my product anymore. But I do refer to them because I'm very honored and happy to have the skill set that I do from the instructor. So yes.
Well, and it's so, what I find fascinating about it, and I connect to that free form style of doing things, that there's a freedom to it, and mm-hmm. then showing up at the loom or at your table and seeing what emerges. And there's something I think incredible about that versus, not that either is like better or worse, but it's so right. different working from a pattern or a pre-decided thing.
Yes.
Making decisions in the moment. And that is very much how I work too in the mediums I work in. So I find that,
yeah.
and the work that emerges from you is so fluid and beautiful, and I just love it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I love every moment of making it. I know I'm doing the right thing because sometimes I get so like almost flustered, like, okay, I have to post and then I have to do all the shipment stuff and I have to respond to my emails, and then I get to sit down at the loom and I'm like, oh, thank God. You know, I'm like so just grateful to be there doing that at that point. Traditional weaving, I kind of forgot to answer that part of the question. I actually did learn traditional weaving years before I ever learned Saori. And it's totally different. It's like you do a blue thread and then five yellow threads and then a blue, you know, every part of it is completely measured, pre-measured. And I can't do that. I actually can't stay in those kind of constructs. So, that's a big part of freeform as well. It's just, like you said, the fluid movement and stuff. I have a very intense family history of musicians on my dad's side. And one of my assistants actually brought up that she thinks I may have them. There's this thing where you kind of like can mix your senses together. And she thinks that I do that because to me, what I'm weaving is essentially, I played the piano for 12 years and I taught it for several years. And when I weave, I'm playing the piano, like I'm making music the same way that I did growing up. And so that's a part of the inspiration for sure. There's a lot behind the inspiration, but that's a big part of it. So, yeah. That's
beautiful. Do you
Thank
want,
you.
Well, I'd love to hear more about what's behind the inspiration. And then also if you can describe the products that you do make from your weavings. For people who haven't seen
sure this. So my process is entirely sustainable and zero waste every step of the way. I use a combination of remnant fibers and I sometimes have to work a little to source them. I'm going to sort of like reuse centers, thrift shops. I'm kind of got my feelers out on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist, stuff like that, estate sales, so that I can continue. Oh, and then sometimes people just give me remnants, which is always amazing. So I'm using these remnants, and then sometimes also purchasing yarn from small businesses, small farms, artists who hand paint or hand spin their yarns. And then when I create the cloth, I'm using every single part of it. So the nice thing about that is that that gives way to a huge range of price points. My most popular items are my signature Mesame jacket, where I'm putting a piece of my handwoven cloth into the back of a jean jacket or blazer. Also my shawls and my bandana cowls are my sort of two most popular items. Some other very well-received ones have been my larger poncho, my mending kits, my summer tops, and then I do many little things. Surprisingly, my sort of middle price point, sort of middle to higher price point items, which are the jackets, shawls, cowls, and ponchos, they sell faster than a lot of the small items. But the small items still have been very popular and have helped me maintain that free, zero waste studio. So it ranges from coasters to like little hair barrettes, keychains, patches, things like that. So at the end of the day, my prices range from $5 to close to $500.
Wow. Yeah, that's great that you have that range. I mean, selling art is such a whole big part of, I mean, running a business, obviously.
It's really hard to sell art, but yeah, yes, it is.
Can you talk about how you sell your work right now and how that's going and anything you want to share about that?
It's definitely a lot more complex than it once was. I've been super fortunate to run into some businesses online that I sell to wholesale. I already had a few businesses that I worked with before all this started, but then a few new ones that I think, from what I can tell, because one is in California, one is in Oregon, and then I have a few throughout the Midwest. They seem to generally have pretty high volume. So they're asking for, you know, 20 cowls at a time, things like that. And so that's been really helpful, having more and more of that during the last year. I initially went to all online selling, and now I'm in Austin, Texas. So we moved from Minneapolis area to Austin in late June. And it was, and still is, really hard to know what to be focusing on trying to do, because we can here have outdoor shows that are socially distanced. They've been going pretty well. I don't think they're nearly as crowded, from what I've heard, as they normally are because of the pandemic and because people are very, very cautious here, which is great. And it's hard to know, you know, just with all art shows, you end up at some venues that are like the perfect fit, and it's like you're on fire and you're meeting all these great people, and then you wind up at some where you're like, this doesn't quite feel like the right fit. And right now I'm like, is it the pandemic, or is it the show, or is it the show and the pandemic, or, you know? And then when you're at a show that's a great fit now, which is probably, you know, it's happened a handful of times, I'm like, should all these people be out here? Should I be out here? So it's like, it's emotionally kind of intense. And I was talking to my mom, actually used to help me run some of my booths and stuff. I was talking to her about this right before the holidays ended. And she's like, well, you should probably like just be focused on networking within the area at shows or online, and you're trying to do both. And it's like, well, but small business, right now you have to do both if you're in a situation where you can. And I've got that move on top of the pandemic, which I'm trying to like throw a net out here, but also don't know if I should be, you know, it's like really weird. But at the end of the day, like, I think a lot of my Minnesota connections and Midwest connections have been amazing, so supportive of my online efforts. And I think that was a huge part of my holiday selling season, which I'm so, so grateful for. And then starting to establish that here through shows. So I'm kind of like splitting 50-50 online. Well, probably going like 40-40 online in shows and then 20% wholesale right now. So it's just hard to like know what to do. It's all just trying to do it safe and trying to make the best choices with the limited knowledge of what's going, you know, what's going on and what will be happening with all of those different outlets. So
totally. And it's all an experiment. I mean, always an experiment, but especially in a pandemic.
Oh, it's like, who knows?
I know. Day by day, step by step. Yeah.
Yep. And then I'm at home, like in my studio, like what? Cause I work from home. I always did. That was convenient when all this started. And now I'm like washing my hands every 5 minutes while I work. Like I want to be so clean in my own home studio. Spraying things.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you talk, actually, that's a good segue. Can you talk about your studio space and how it's set up and what's in it and what you need around you to be creative?
I'm a messy creator to begin with. Throw in zero waste and it's pretty intensely messy sometimes, but I try to keep it under control because yarn tangles up together and we wind up with these like huge masses of like tangles if I'm not a little aware. So we had a lot of built-ins in our Minnesota home and I was not prepared for the fact that in Texas that is like not a thing. They don't have all these like built-in shelves and things like that. So I had to sort of like recreate some of what I had in Minnesota. And honestly, we're in this like open floor plan. And so my studio is in what would have been the formal dining room. It's kind of ridiculous because my kids and the dog and I walk past it constantly all day. It's like, so it has to be slightly under control or it gets really bad. So I have now the cube shelves, kind of almost floor to ceiling, separating the living room from what is a quote unquote dining room. And then in Minnesota, I used to just put the yarns into the cubes and kind of by color. Whereas here with it being like right in everybody's visible space, I wanted it to be more contained than that. So I invested in some baskets that I could pull in and out. And it's actually been really nice because, well, so everything I'm working with is remnants, as I mentioned. So we're talking a lot of different textures, a lot of different sizes of yarns. It's not easy to keep them contained to begin with. So this has almost been sort of like a silver lining to the situation. With the baskets, I'm able to put a general colorway into each basket. So I have like the top shelf are all different types of neutrals. And then there's one that's mostly like yellows and light greens, one that's all different forms of blues, purples, color changing and hand painted. So, you know, et cetera. And then I have some, tables that go in an L shape on the other side of the room with my two different sewing machines and my computer set up. And then another set of cubes with sort of fabric and mailing supplies organized into it. And then underneath the desks, I have, as best as I can, denim remnants, threads, all of those types of supplies organized into different shelves and different types of drawers with a work table on the other side of, on the other side, sort of adjacent to the yarn shelves. So I do have a lot more denim and fabric than that room can accommodate right now. And so those are organized into like a guest bedroom closet. So.
And then is your loom in the middle of that or where is your loom? Yeah.
Good question. My loom is in the middle of that.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what's your schedule and rhythm like right now with creating and how long does it take? You know, can you talk about that?
That's a great question. So what has been pretty critical for me and what I honestly did not necessarily expect, like you think that you're just gonna like have kids and like they're gonna like run around the studio and like paint pictures and you're gonna like be weaving and getting all this stuff done, and that is not reality at all. They are in an in-person school now. They have to be like, we're so careful with that because of the pandemic. So my five-year-old he's at a public school. They are all required to wear masks and space the entire time. At my daughter's preschool, there has been very little COVID cases, and they are very, very careful. So the two times there was one, the entire school shut down. So with the level of cautiousness that, well, and if our children have so much as like a runny nose, they stay home, which I think a lot of other families are doing right now. And so I have been able to continue working because of that. When before they went back to in-person, we did have them home, and I just got a lot less done, and I had to sort of adjust because they're at ages that they're independent, more independent than babies, but they need a lot of sort of guidance through the day. So what ends up happening is I kind of am sporadically stepping in and out. And I mean, since it's right in the middle of the house, not hard to do. So being in and out of this studio, engaging them in creative projects when I can in there, and then getting up either super early or staying up super late. Now it's kind of swung into being more like getting up as early as I can before they get up to work along, or to work before they get up. So that's that routine, like when they were home and now that they're in school, establishing a routine is really critical for me to be able to have this as a full-time job. So if I wasn't able to figure out a way to work within the needs of my family and the requirements and sort of guidelines of the pandemic restrictions, I would have to find some other type of work. And so I have had to be very creative, and I have had to keep my motivation up as much as possible, even though I think for a lot of creatives, if we're still making right now, after all this, some people have quit for the time being. We've sort of jumped through so many hoops and challenges that our motivation to keep like reinventing the wheel for our businesses is starting to get a little like tired. We have to love what we do to still be doing it, and we do, but there have definitely been moments where I'm like, I'm just gonna lay low, like I just need a day or two. I was listening to one of your episodes about emotional well-being for people like us during the election, and I'll say like that whole week or two I could not, I need my routine, like the holidays are coming and I just can't. So
I get it. And it is kind of, I mean, I feel like it's all the things all at once. It's nice that we have the flexibility that we cannot work for a day. It's also then like, oh shit, I haven't worked for a day, you know, the pressure that can be in a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how your practice, how weaving impacts you emotionally or spiritually, like in when you're in the process of weaving?
Absolutely. So I come from a family that had a very intense religious upbringing, and I'm not a very intense religious person now. There's a long story behind that, but a big part of it is that my brother and I are actually both like LGBTQ, and feeling like we were told that it was bad and feeling like we were sort of rejected on a lot of different sides of society was a very painful part of my growing up period. And as an adult, realizing that I do still have a set of beliefs and I do still have a spirituality, but it's not easy to define. And it's also not easy to define, you know, we were kind of raised with this black and white thinking, and all of my thinking exists in the gray, basically. My weaving has a lot to do with all of that. When I was first weaving, I'm like, this is so emotional. I get kind of like, when I was first weaving, I accidentally made a hole. Well, first weaving under the freeform instructor. And I was kind of stressed out because I do have some anxiety because of sort of that past. And there was a twisted hole in the work and I didn't know how it happened. And I got kind of upset and stressed out about it. And my instructor just like in a second looked and said, oh, look, you made a window. And the level of, it's kind of interesting, like those little moments that we end up carrying with us for the rest of our life. That sensation that I could just sort of drop my stress over making mistakes was a really big deal. And when I weave, a big part of sort of the imagery that I create, it's inspired by landscapes. I love nature. But in addition, a lot of times I don't know if I'm weaving the foreground or the background. And that's very intentional and very spiritual to me because it says to me that we don't, and also I don't necessarily know where the piece is going to wind up. That's another part of it. So to me, those elements show and signify that we don't always know what the answer is. We don't always know where we're going. We don't always know if we're looking at the negative or positive side of something. And that's okay. And that's meant to be that way. And the triangles too are definitely, people see triangles. Some people call it arrows or zigzags. Any of those things have a lot to do with sort of vanishing point, where we're going, what that means, sort of the scape that's in the distance or that's close up to us. And also triangles can represent a lot of different things. I mean, it's pretty endless. Some people would say, oh, it's the Trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, right? That was what I would have been told as a child, which is a really cool element of spirituality. I do think that there's some really neat things that I was taught that I do treasure. But then there are people too that see, like I said, vanishing point, or that see a landscape, or that see a symbol of sexuality, and or that see unity, and all of those really good things I want people to see and to feel mean something to them and represent who they are. My business philosophies are always being sustainable, always being inclusive of all different body types, and making any person feel comfortable when they wear my work, and also celebrating individuality. And so that thought of loving someone just as they are and celebrating them exactly as they are right now is something that I want people to feel through my work and feel through wearing my work. And so that's all part of it too. The fact that because it's from this zero waste remnant process, no one can actually, even if someone said, please make me something as close as possible to this piece, it can't be the same. And that's intentional as well. So.
Ah, that's beautiful. I love everything.
Thank you.
Said, yeah. Like, thank fuck you. Yeah.
I'm like, I have to say this right. Cause I was just talking late last night with a friend over text about that, like people that have inner dialogue versus people that don't. Have you heard of this whole thing?
No, but it's I have an inner dialogue.
I don't. I thought when I first read the article, oh, I have that too. And then I was like, wait a minute, I don't. I'm totally like driven by, you know, schedule, routine, deadlines, etc. And so then when I process things, it's all in my brain. And what I say or write, I'm like, okay, that's what I'm thinking. So it's apparently for a long time, everybody just assumed that everybody had that. And it was like very recently that some articles came out. I think it was February of 2020. An article came out or maybe it was just before that, saying like, hey, not everybody has this. And it sparked this like viral online conversation about how everybody's like, wait a minute, not everybody thinks like this.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. I love psychology. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I just thought of two other questions to ask you. Well, one, when you're weaving and you're sitting at your loom, can you talk about I'm curious, how does the physical act of weaving and touching all the fibers help you, or do you find that you process thoughts or emotions, or are things releasing through you while you're weaving? Do you find a connection there?
Yes. Absolutely. I think that a lot of times, just because although I don't have an inner dialogue, I think very fast. And I think that when I can sort of shut that off and just weave thoughts and feelings out, it's very soothing in that regard. Yet at the same time, if I'm processing, okay, it's hard to even know. It's like chicken or the egg. There are times where I get really deep into the process and then start having like intense realizations and thoughts about current events or personal pasts, things like that. And I'm like, did that just happen because I stayed up all night weaving? Or did I stay up all night weaving because I was processing something really, really big? It's hard to know, but it definitely often will show in the work afterwards. After Floyd died, I was really grief stricken and very, very, very intensely sad. And I had a hard time making anything. I just felt so disturbed and, I just wanted to amplify every voice in my brain and in my being that needed to be heard and not do my own creative work at that time. It ended up that eventually I needed to weave, for deadline, but also because emotionally I needed to get some of my thoughts into something creative and some of my anxiety really over what was going on in our world into a material that had been created, that helps a lot with just sorting things out. And it was really interesting because some of the pieces that I made were very inspired by the imagery that was in the news at the time. And I did not consciously think I was doing that. And I could see how I worked through so much. And there was a large jacket, a kind of a coat that I made that Gallery 360 actually sold to somebody local in Minnesota that was about a lot of those things and a lot of sort of my hope for people that were struggling so much more to just be carried and embraced during that time. And it's interesting because, and kind of a cool situation, I had one of the pieces that was very evidently inspired by that time at a show of mine here in Austin. And I was going to do a trade for a photo with another artist. And it was really fascinating because this photo that I purchased was of some of the people holding signs in Floyd's honor at a gathering here in Austin. And I was really excited. I was going to give it to my sister for her gift and for the holidays. And then the item that she selected was the top that I made out of some of the fabric that I created in sort of the wake of all of those times. And when I told her that, she was also like, wait a minute, do you realize that your piece that you're picking from my work, as well as this piece that I'm picking of your work, were both created directly about that. And I hadn't even realized it. I was just like, oh, I'm so glad you like the top. And then it was like, wait a minute, this is a really cool trade here. So yeah.
Oh, that's yeah. So cool. What an amazing, just intuitive connection.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. She's a good friend of mine now. So yep.
Huh. Oh, cool. Yep. I love it. So can you tell me about your relationship to color and how you use it in your work?
Yes. So color theory, I studied color theory first year of college, and some of the different lessons about how gray, there's a different gray for every color, as well as how color can be so relative, how next to one set of colors, it looks like an entirely different color than it does among others. Those types of things like geek me out to the very high degree, to a very high degree. I could talk about that and think about that for days on end. And that's exactly what I do when I weave. So I like to play a lot with that. I definitely also do look at landscapes, and sometimes it's photos, but sometimes it's just when I'm driving and I can see how the sky has all of these different shades between two colors. It's a very fascinating phenomenon. And studying how colors transition, to me, there's a lot of symbolism and spiritual connections with that as well. And so I never get tired of doing that when I weave. Sometimes definitely people will just send me past work of mine and say that they want like a combination of all these things. More often than not, it's like some of my favorite pieces that they've picked. So I'm like, great, I can play with all of those again.
Do you choose a color palette for specific pieces to work in, or does that just kind of flow?
Usually, yes. So that's part of my like messy studio issue, is that I, when I'm like getting really inspired and I'm getting into the process, I'll often create little collections of yarn and work from those little kind of, I call a yarn palette. I also have a box that's like all of the really weird tangled pieces. And a lot of times the very tangled stuff is my favorite stuff. So I'll incorporate little pieces of that in, and that also helps with some of the color sort of play that I do. Right here in front of me right now on the loom, there's a little bit of a transition from like a brown to a just very slightly to a green, then teal, and then more of a blue stripe. And a lot of that is like a combination of yarns that are already in existence and then little tiny pieces that I've put in. And so that's part of the texture and kind of color studies that I do within each piece. Often I'll have that palette set aside, but then I'll be grabbing other little things here and there to play with as I go.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Huh.
Thank you.
And I have a question just popped in my mind about how you weave the different pieces that you have. So the cowl like that you're wearing right now versus the jean jackets or the wraps, are there some pieces that you weave, or are all of them woven individually, or are any of them like long pieces that then you end up cutting up and turning into multiples?
That's a super great question. So production wise, this is one of the things that I've really had to think about and have had to sort of use in my custom order timeframe and description. So in order to sustainably make a living doing this, the best thing for me to do is to warp up. So that's all the threads that go up and down, thread my loom up. It's called warping, to do the full, I think it's like around 12 meters that it can potentially take at a time. And in doing that, I'm able to spend more time making and less time setting up. And I can create several items at a go. So also it's more sustainable to not be rethreading, because there's threads that I use the waste, but it's also time-wise as well as materials-wise, it's more sustainable to not have that waste to begin with. So I set up my loom to do as much yardage as I possibly can, noting that it's going to be, often I go the width of a shawl, the width of a cowl, or something in between that's maybe going to be used for jackets or for larger woven garments that I've made. And this is one place that I could tell when I did study more traditional Saori that my instructor was like, I think you can still fly as a Saori while doing that. Meaning that it's supposed to be the Saori in and of itself is supposed to be so freeform that you're not even worried about what you're making. Whereas I have such a passion to make stuff that people can wear and use that I am always thinking about what I'm making. My play and my freeform approach is within the piece that I've created. And so right now I've got about, I think, 5 cowls that are all the same fabric, the same piece. So I'll take them off. I'll separate them with some technique so that they don't completely unravel as I'm separating them. And then I'll go back and weave more. If I have any amount of warp left after I've finished what I need to get for cowls, then I'll use that to make small items or baby jacket panels or any number of other items that I have on my mind.
Cool. Fascinating.
Thank you.
Huh. Thank you. I wish I could watch you weave. I've thought that since I discovered
you. Oh, thank you.
Do you ever do videos or have you thought about that?
So, I would love to. I need to sort of get my ducks in a row to maybe do some videos for YouTube. I'd like to create a series where I talk about different things with just wearing my work, like how to style it, how to take care of it, how to wear it, how to mend it if needed, and then also do some footage where I am showing like how my process works without telling too many of the secrets. But right. I need to get some different things set up for that, and I think that's one of the things that I'd like to work on in the next year, especially since we're all still mainly staying home. It would be nice to work on having more video footage and sort of visuals under my belt. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited whenever that happens.
Thank you. I will let you know. I've been taking my loom since the weather's a little more generally. There are some weird, crazy weather situations here too, believe it or not. But I've been bringing my loom when it's for sure going to be a dry, cool day here to some of the shows. And that's been a big hit. So yeah.
That's great. Cause it's always, I mean, as an artist, I love seeing other artists make work, but just in general, being able to make the connection between the making and the product is wonderful. It just deepens the experience of.
I think so. I think a lot of times people that know me and know what I'm doing know that I've created this, but straight out the gate, people don't necessarily know. They're like, are you buying this or how is this? Are you knitting this? They don't necessarily know. And having it, the loom along with me, clears that up right away. People know that I'm making it and they know exactly what's going into it, which means a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I just have a few more questions for you. This is so fun. Are there any techniques or mediums that you want to try that you haven't tried yet?
That's a good question. I chose weaving as sort of my main technique to work on business-wise because I can do something new every time. I can play within the cloth as much as I want. I can really go off of my signature style with this at any time. And I'm still totally cool with going on with this particular type of work. However, I am also, I also chose this route because I can play with other types of things and use my weaving in the process, meaning that if I wanted to hand dye fabric or hand dye yarns to incorporate into a garment that includes my weaving, I can do that. If I want to play with embroidery in work that includes my weaving, I can do that. So I think I would like to play a little bit more with some of those different types of techniques and bringing them into the signature style of work that I do. But as of now, I'm still very content with just doing as much as I can with weaving and sort of reaching as many people as I can through the meaning that's behind it.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah. And what's coming up for you? What are you looking forward to? What are you planning on? Anything you want to share about that?
Yeah. So I have been so excited to meet different ongoing shows within Austin. And I've been doing shows with a number of those different groups. And so I'm looking forward to continuing to do that with social distancing and safety in mind at all times. And as things lift or get better, which hopefully that's the direction we're going in at this point, I'm very excited to do big art shows in this area and sort of meet people and get to know different areas within this whole region, as well as travel back to Minnesota and reconnect there. I think that's one of the main sort of goals that I have right now, is just navigating, getting through the, hopefully, like I've said, like hopefully last of this, and then recontinuing. Right before the pandemic started, I had the huge honor of one of my jackets being used for an Etsy commercial. And so I was getting a lot of new online business that way. And I was also traveling more for big shows in different states. I had just gotten back from a show in Baltimore and was packing up for a show in Atlanta when everything started getting shut down. And picking up where I left off, at least to a certain extent, with traveling would be really fun, just because it was a really neat way to sort of meet artists everywhere, meet different types of businesses that I could collaborate with everywhere, as well as like connect with different customers and friends in all different states. And travel was never a driving force for my career or like something that I thought I would be passionate about doing, but just the experiences that I was able to have before the pandemic started shutting everything down and before it was unsafe to do so, it was really exciting to have like, oh, okay, well, I could stay with friends in New York. I could stay with friends in San Francisco. I could stay with friends in Baltimore and do shows in any of these places. And certainly being here in Austin has been a part of that. And that's, I even had someone once say to me, like, you need to like spread your wings and try all these new things because they're all here. And I'm like, that's so true. And so even though the pandemic is very limiting and moving in some ways feels like it's been limiting this past year, it has opened a lot of doors and helped me to meet new people. So I just want to keep doing that.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a lot too. I know. Hopefully whenever it shifts, I wonder how it will feel those first few times to just be in a room with strangers or be out in public without masks on, you know, all those moments that are going to happen eventually. And the artists, I feel, we're going to be the ones like paying attention really to what that all, you know, the layers of all of that.
The looks in people's eyes, like even with masks on, I'm like, you can see so much because you can see people's eyes. And that's like a really intense thing to be able to see. And other people are like, what?
Yeah. What are you talking about? Well, I think, so just the last thing is, where can people find you online?
Good question. So Instagram is one of my main places to chat about living sustainable and chat about the meaning of my work and sort of get a little more elbow deep. And that is Instagram.com/mesumedesigns. Etsy, I keep it as full as I can. Sometimes as, like right now, it's fairly empty shop, but it's still there. And I have things listed for sale on Etsy at all times. So that is Etsy.com/shop/mesumedesigns and Mesume Designs on Facebook as well. So same name. I had a little weird situation right before Christmas where my entire Instagram was locked down. I don't know if you know.
Oh, I saw that. I was like, oh no.
Oh my gosh. Because it's like, okay, I only have like
around 3,000 followers on there, but they are like 3,000 real people. And I was a wreck. Like, it was so bad. And I did start a new Instagram called Modern Weavings by Mezume. I have not really used it since my original account was opened back up, but I do plan to use it for more sort of like behind the scenes posts, I think, in the next year. So,
yes. And have you thought about, I think I saw you post that you were working on a website. Where's that right now?
I would love to do that. That's very much in the works, but part of what I want to be able to do with a website is talk about the story behind each of the pieces a lot more with Etsy and just the way the listings are. Like, even if I tuck into the information, the processing time for certain types of items, like, that gets missed. So I definitely can't talk as much to the story behind the items on that type of platform. But on a website, I would hope that like the homepage has more information. There's a lot more sort of tabs where you can learn about different elements behind my work. And then also sort of the inspiration behind each of the pieces is a whole different story. So I think that having that available through the website, or simply having a website where people can more easily find what they're looking for than going to Etsy where everything's on one page would be great. So that's a goal. I also am hoping to do a bit of a rebrand, just kind of a refresh in the next few months. So that's all in the works.
Just a few more things to add to the plate.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, thank you for doing this, Lauren. I really loved learning more about you and your process. And, you know, I've known you now for a couple of years, I think. And but this was great to just go deeper, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Okay, that's it. I hope you enjoyed our conversation, and you can find the links to Lauren's work through the show notes. And if you liked this episode, I would love if you left a review or shared it with someone who you think might enjoy it. That's how we can spread the word about this creative project and just my passion and our collective passion for the arts and the importance of creative self-expression in this world of ours that needs more of that all the time. So thank you so much for listening.